Before I begin, we'll be in the 34th chapter of Exodus. And to my mind, the 34th chapter is one of the most important chapters in all the book of Exodus. And I hope to be able to expound on it a little bit today. One thing I have not done, I have not moved rapidly far forward, so you kind of know what is being said, so you have a hindsight. I want to kind of have you kind of go along with the story, go along with Moses, so we can understand a little bit. I'm a person who really, I guess I'll tell you, I really do my very, very, very best to listen to what Moses is telling us. And one of the reasons is because I took a random count real quick this morning, not in detail. But in the book of Exodus alone, when it says the Lord spoke unto, or the Lord said unto Moses, is 30 times plus. And the book of Numbers is 30 times plus. And and the book of Leviticus is 30 plus. I didn't go to Deuteronomy because sometimes he just requoted what God is saying to him, although there are places in the Bible which when it says, and Moses, and the Lord spoke unto Moses, and he said, that is capital H, so I didn't get all that particular down, but I would like to ask you a question. Do you think God spoke to Moses? He spoke to Moses more than anybody else. And the reason why I do an awful lot of the things in relationship to Moses, because if we don't have what God said to Moses, we will not understand what God said to his son to say to us today. Because it's the song of Moses has to be heard first. And then the song of the Lamb can be heard secondly. It's always in that process. That's a pattern that God has always worked with and always will work with. We just have to kind of look at it and say, how come it's that way? Well, because he's Lord, and he is God, and he makes the decisions. You know, we learned last week, if I'm not mistaken, when Daniel went through some of the, quote, mysterious methods, of how God uses the unknown person and brings them forward, and there they are. The unexpected one becomes forward. The one you expect, or I expect, is not the one that God chooses. He chooses the unexpected one. Well, that's because he's God. Just plain that. So I just wanted to make that statement to you that I now and then drift into the New Testament. I don't drift into it. I go there for a purpose. And I'll be going there in the purpose in the near future. It has to do with some of the things that are spoken in the first two or three chapters of the book of Romans, which I think is very, very important for background, not a book of Romans, I'll just give you a quick outline of what is being said, how I look at it, and I want to make one more statement to you, to clarification. What I teach you is what I believe. It's not what I teach you, you must believe. You understand what I'm saying? Very, very important that what I'm saying is this is what I believe, and I do my very best to stick with what is written at all times. And do I get them right all the time? No. Do I try? Yes. Do I ask God? Yes. And so I wait. I do a lot of waiting. I'm not impatient. I do a lot of waiting. I just want to make myself a little bit clearer about this because I do speak a lot about Moses. And I think it's a very important individual for us to do. And to pay attention to, because when God spoke to him all those hundreds of times, we should probably pay attention to what's being said. All right. So with that being said, let's go to Exodus, the 34th chapter. We have a reader.
First ones. And I will write on these tablets the words that were on the first tablets which you broke. So be ready in the morning, and come up in the morning to Mount Sinai, and present yourself to me there on the top of the mountain. And no man shall come up with you, and let no man be seen throughout all the mountain. Let neither flocks nor herds feed before that mountain. So he cut two tablets of stone like the first ones. Then Moses rose early in the morning and went up to Mount Sinai, as the Lord had commanded him, and he took in his hand the two tablets of stone. Now the Lord descended in the cloud and stood with him there and proclaimed the name of the Lord. And the Lord passed before him and proclaimed, the Lord God, merciful and gracious, long-suffering and abounding in goodness and truth, keeping mercy for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgression and sin, by no means clearing the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children and the children's children to the third and the fourth generation. So Moses made haste and bowed his head toward the earth and worshipped. Then he said, if now I have found grace in your sight, O Lord, let my Lord, I pray, go among us, even though we are a stiff-necked people, and pardon our iniquity and our sin, and take us as your inheritance. And he said, behold, I make a covenant. Before all your people I will do marvels such as have not been done in all the earth, nor in any nation, and all the people among whom you are shall see the work of the Lord. For it is an awesome thing that I will do with you. Observe what I command you this day. Behold, I am driving out from before you the Amorite and the Canaanite and the Hittite and the Perizzite and the Hivite and the Jebusite. Take heed to yourself, lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land where you are going, lest it be a snare in your midst. But you shall destroy their altars, break their sacred pillars, and cut down their wooden images. For you shall worship no other god, for the Lord, whose name is Jealous, is a jealous God. Lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land, and they play the harlot with their gods, and make sacrifice to their gods, and one of them invites you, and you eat of his sacrifice, and you take of his daughters for your sons, and his daughters play the harlot with their gods, and make your sons play the harlot with their gods. You shall make no molded gods for yourselves. The feast of unleavened bread you shall keep. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, as I commanded you, in the appointed time of the month of Abib. For in the month of Abib you came out from Egypt. All that open the womb are mine, and every male firstborn among your livestock, whether ox or sheep. But the firstborn of a donkey you shall redeem with a lamb. And if you will not redeem him, then you shall break his neck. All the firstborn of your sons you shall redeem, and none shall appear before me empty-handed. 6 days you shall work, but on the seventh day you shall rest. In plowing time and in harvest you shall rest. And you shall observe the feast of weeks, of the first fruits of wheat harvest, and the feast of ingathering at the year's end. 3 times in the year all your men shall appear before the Lord God of Israel. For I will cast out the nations before you and enlarge your borders, neither will any man covet your land when you go up to appear before the Lord your God 3 times in the year. You shall not offer the blood of my sacrifice with leaven, nor shall the sacrifice of the feast of the Passover be left until morning. The first of the first fruits of your land you shall bring to the house of the Lord your God. You shall not boil a young goat in its mother's milk. Then the Lord said to Moses, write these words, for according to the tenor of these words I have made a covenant with you and with Israel. So he was there with the Lord 40 days and 40 nights. He neither ate bread nor drank water, and he wrote on the tablets the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments. Now it was so, when Moses came down from Mount Sinai, and the two tablets of the testimony were in Moses' hands when he came down from the mountain, that Moses did not know that the skin of his face shone while he talked with them. So when Aaron and the children of Israel saw Moses, behold, the skin of his face shone, and they were afraid to come near him. Then Moses called to them, and Aaron and all the rulers of the congregation returned to him, and Moses talked with them. Afterward, all the children of Israel came near, and he gave them as commandments all that the Lord had spoken with him on Mount Sinai. And when Moses had finished speaking with them, he put a veil on his face. But whenever Moses went in before the Lord to speak with him, he would take the veil off until he came out. And he would come out and speak to the children of Israel whatever he had been commanded. And whenever the children of Israel saw the face of Moses, that the skin of Moses' face shone, then Moses would put the veil on his face again until he went in to speak with him.
So what do you think?
Question, is this the second series of 40 days then?
Yes.
Okay. Looking at verse 20, but the firstling of an ass thou shalt redeem with a lamb. All the animals that the Lord used for sacrifice, none of them need to be redeemed except the ass. What is different about the ass that, or the donkey?
We'll talk about that.
Okay.
Yes. Actually, I'll try to find out if someone else can answer that question first. They've been with me for a while. Yes.
Well, I know they got the orders for the building of the tabernacle, but that had not yet been started. Is that correct?
Not has not been started.
Okay.
When we read the 34th chapter, there's not an awful lot of detail there, is there? Now, when we read the first part, he went up to the mountain, there was a great detail. What was the detail mostly written about? The dwelling place where God's going to live, all right? Now, Moses, the book of Leviticus covers tremendous amount of information. When we get there, we will get there. In fact, that's coming up real soon. Understand what took place on the first time up the mountain. But this particular time is the second time. Now, I want you to pay attention as we go along to understanding something or have a remembrance of something, put it this way. How many days was it that it take them to get to Mount Sinai? 50 days. Okay. And then, immediately, Moses went up for 40 days. Okay, now we know that Feast of Shavuot is in the third month. Now, 40 days later, we go past that, and you're entering into, what, the fifth month. Now, there's a killing taking place. How long that killing took place, that doesn't show us. Now, he goes back up there again, and he goes for another 40 days. Now, wait a minute. Let's keep moving it forward. What time of the year is this about? Early fall. We're almost in the seventh month. We're approaching the seventh month. So we have a time cycle here. And the reason why I'm saying the seventh month is because it's something very, very important that Moses said. Back in the 32nd chapter, after the killing took place, right? The sons of the Levites came in, they did some executing. It took a while for them to clean the mess up. It took a while for that gold to be consumed. It took a while to destroy the images. And how long, I do not know, doesn't tell us. I think it took more than 1 or 2 days. You know, you got to bury an awful lot of bodies. You've got to clean the mess up. Then you got to start cleaning up and sanctifying the place. And Moses said, put on new garments and get yourself ready. Perhaps, he said, I can go and make an atonement for your sins. What did he offer as an atonement for their sins? Himself. To be blotted out of the book of life. Now, some people may look back and say, well, that's just a lot of word. Moses trying to be self-righteous there. He wanted to be the Holy of Holies. No, no, no. He was very upset. And he wanted the people to live. He really wanted them to live. And he wanted God to really, truly forgive them. What did God say? No, you're not the one. And I'm going to make those who transgress against me pay the price. And then he sent a plague. Now, we don't know how long or what that plague was. We don't know. They didn't tell us the number. After the execution took place from the Levites, there was a plague that also came, but it didn't tell you how many died. That took a while to clean up that mess too, right? So I'm telling you, as we're moving very, very close to, you know, the fall time. So I'm saying probably the latter part of fifth month, or the first part, I'd say, you know, somewhere in the latter part of the fifth month, and the sixth month being around 29, 30 days, we know it's about halfway through the fifth month. All right? Now he goes up the mountain. Do you find something very unusual about this? What strikes out to you the most unpredictable thing? Nothing? We're in the 34th chapter now. I'm sorry, what? Okay. That's not unusual. He's been there before. Yeah. Go get her first.
I was going to say that God was willing to write the commandments over again, the two tablets.
All right.
Were the two tablets of stone to be gone for 40 days and didn't take other preparation with him?
Took nothing with him. Took absolutely nothing with him. And more than likely, what it says there, that God said something to him. He says, and Yahuwah said to Moses, cut two tablets of stone like the first ones, and I will write on these tablets the words that I were on the first tablets, which you broke. Oh, wow. Why did Moses break them? He was angry. He didn't fulfill what Apostle Paul said, right? Hey, you elders, you teachers, you should never be angry. You should never raise your voice. You should never be hostile. Whoops! Moses failed in that one. Of course, now, we have to understand what Apostle Paul is referring to when he's talking to Timothy at that point. We're not going to go there. That's sometime way in the future when Jeff ever gets there. Anyway, so I wondered it. Now, the very another fascinating thing is, and I look at this thing, and I says, okay, Moses had to do something. What did he have to do? He had to cut two more stones. And I don't think he ordered them done, my personal opinion. I think he had to chisel them out himself. That's my personal opinion. I could be wrong. You know, I could be wrong. But the interesting thing I found is in verse 3. Did you notice verse 3? Read verse 3 very carefully. No man shall come up with you. Now, first time, who went up with him? Joshua, for a distance. Now, he says, let no man be seen throughout all the entire mountain. At all. And he says, don't let the flock or herd or anything come on that mountain. Now, let me ask you a question. Go ahead.
Partway up the mountain the first time?
Joshua went up the first time. Not the second time.
The elders did as well, didn't they?
No. Oh, yes, but they had come back down again. They came back down again. They had to run the operation. Remember, because Moses said to Aaron, you should have done stop this. But he didn't. Okay. Now, I'll ask you a question. I said about 150 plus times we go through Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers that the Lord spoke unto Moses, said unto Moses. Of course, he did say something to Abraham, maybe to Abraham, Isaac. That's the book of Exodus. He did say once in a while, speak to Miriam. He did speak to, you know, Aaron a few times, not an awful lot. We live in a world because, you know, we go to the Torah. You must have two witnesses. You know, there was no witness up there. Only Moses. Do you believe Moses was there all by himself? No one else saw him. No one else knew he was up there. They didn't know where he was at again, up there on top. Okay, no witness that he's up there. No Joshua halfway up to say he testified, seeing him go up. What are we supposed to believe? 34th chapter is not of God because not a second witness? Woo! You know? So we have to be careful. But Jesus made a statement. He says, I don't need a second witness. Period. That's what he said. So we have Joshua.
The thing about this second time when he came back down is his face shone, was bright, which in a sense is a second witness because he was with God.
I'm saying that no one was up there. Keep this in mind. Very, very important. It's what we have to say is, do we believe what Moses said? Well, what did God say to Moses up there? You remember what he said up there? He said, okay, this is what we're going to do. Okay. And he says, remember Moses said in the 34th chapter, 32nd chapter, I don't know you at all. I don't know who you are. I don't know anything about you. And yet you say you have favor toward me. And you say you call me and you know my name. In other words, you issued me my name. I don't know who you are. Wait a minute. Aren't you the one, Moses, that, you know, split the water apart? Aren't you the Moses that hit that rock and out come water? Moses, aren't you the guy who threw a stick down and all snakes got eaten up? Moses, what do you mean you don't know God? No, he said, I don't know you. That's a pretty powerful statement, isn't it?
Where did you say, who was saying that I don't know you? Was God saying it to Moses, I don't know you, or the
yes.
other way around?
32nd chapter of okay. Exodus. Moses saying that to God, I don't know you. So God says, okay, just you. Just you. You're the only one I'm going to tell. You're the only one I'm going to tell you who I am. You know what the word mercy means in Hebrew? Do you know, huh? The word is kindness. You have kindness toward me. Now, it's the same thing by the way in Greek when you use the word grace. It's kindness. Now, we kind of interpret that. I'm sorry. As being he is, I have received grace from God for my sins and transgressions. While you have seen favor from him, he didn't put the transgressions and sins upon you. So whenever time you say, God has given me grace, keep in mind, he didn't kill you. Because that's what it's all about. He's kind to you, not to destroy you, for going against him. Now we have a story here, all this point, and up to this point in time, where we see the power of God destroying, 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 and destroying. We see the power of God destroying the world with the flood. We see the power of God destroying Egypt and all the elders of Egypt. We see the power of God destroying the people here in the Mount Sinai. We see the power of God doing an awful lot of literally killing. Right? That's what you see a picture of. So Moses said, I don't know you. What is it you are really after? What is it makes you tick? What is it you really want us to? You said, you have granted me a tremendous amount of kindness. I want to know who you are. And he says, okay. What did he do? He told Moses to go up to the top of the mountain. Second time. And now he gets to know who he really is. What did the Lord say? You remember what he said? When he covered his hands, he would not be seen. His first statement was, Yahuwah, Yahuwah, Elohim, merciful and gracious, long-suffering, abounding in goodness and in truth. Really? Keeping mercy for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgressions and sins, by no means clearing the guilty, visiting the iniquities of the fathers unto the children unto the third and fourth generation. Wow. Okay. Now you need to describe something about who you are. Did Moses get the picture? Not yet. Not yet. All right. This chapter doesn't tell you everything that God said. Later on, as we advance into the other statements that Moses said, we will find out what he said. I want to try to explain something to you. It's a pattern with God. Well, let me go on one more time. He goes down to verse, after he tells them they're stiff-necked, Moses admitted, okay, verse 10, behold, I make a covenant. Wait a minute, didn't you already do that? Yes, you did. Oh, and from this point in time in history, all you ever hear about, all the way up until, quote, the New Testament, there's only one commandment, only one covenant. In force, all the way through, all the way through, all the way through, all the way through. Where's the second one? See, the second one tells you, second time in the mountain, tells you something about God. And that is, he is kind, merciful, and he will show mercy unto thousands of those. How is he going to do that? He just got through destroying. We go through Numbers, and we'll go through, as Daniel goes through the prophets, how many people got killed by God? A lot. God didn't find favor to help out the Israelites in sometimes their battle, because they didn't go to God first. And they lost. Why didn't you save them? Because, see, he's not telling them precisely everything. But he did tell Moses of something. And Moses began to understand. He said, therefore, behold, your people, I will do marvels such as not been seen or been done in all the earth, nor in any nation. And all the people around among whom you are shall see the work of Yahuwah. For it is an awesome thing that I will do with you. So what did he do? See, we have a history that says, Israel, get out of my sight. I don't want to see you again. Get out of my home. Oh, is that merciful, kindness, and compassion? One that shows thousands merciful? Or is it one guy that says, I've had it with you. Get out of here. And then the other tribe, you know, the other one called the Judah tribe. I'm going to raise up a man who's going to come in there and destroy you. He got up, raised up Nebuchadnezzar, came in, destroyed all the people, and took them to captivity. Wait a minute, where is this at? Where is this thing at? Wait, who'd you say? What'd you say you were? I'm what? I'm merciful. I'm gracious. I'm loving. I'm long suffering and abounding in goodness and in truth. And I shall keeping the mercy. I'm going to keep my kindness towards you, or toward them for thousands, forgiving iniquities and transgressions and sins. But then we see, wow, what's transpiring here? What covenant do you think he was talking about? One that nobody ever thought about. The only way you and I can ever have that kind of God in our world is when the atonement has been finished. We're heading toward the fall feast here in the book of Exodus at this point in time. Moses is up there in the fifth month, up to the sixth month, and guess what happens the next month? Bambo, the fall feast. Two very important holidays take place prior to, quote, the Feast of Tabernacles. They have to be carried out. Because he also said something else in his message. By no means cleansing the guilty. Oh. What do we think about the day of the Feast of Trumpets as? The return of God. Yeah, return of Christ. Christ is coming. With what? An army? It's called the Day of Judgment. He's going to come with severe, unless we don't believe Revelations. The Revelation is a joke, then it's a joke. Cut it out, your Bible, and throw it away. But he's come with incredible power. So mighty, so powerful, that no man can stand. Every man be so terrified. Every human be so terrified. Their knees are going to be like water. They'll not be able to stand. Whether that's literally or spiritually or any other concept you want to think about, right? Abstract, whatever. It's just not going to be able to stand against him. But then what's going to happen? All of Israel will be saved. Is it overnight salvation? Also, Paul says, today is your day of salvation. Do not neglect it. Do not neglect it. You've been put into a great and awesome awesomeness that nobody else has ever been part of. That's where you are. See, and that's the covenant he said he's going to make. And when we get into the book of Deuteronomy later on, I hope to show you in detail what was said on that mountain. Because that's very, very important. And of course, he didn't tell them the detail until 40 years later. Not coincidental. That was planned. Of course, he says, I'm going to drive out all these people. But he's going to write this Ten Commandments back upon that block. My daughter from Wyoming called up this morning. And she was excited about something. She's reading in Numbers. When we get Numbers, we'll go through that again. But it's all the places. Now, sometimes when we read the encampment here, encampment there, encampment here. We just, okay, let's get to the point, let's get to the point. Until you start adding up the numbers, how many times the encampment is quoted in the book of Numbers. And you say, oh, wow, interesting number. What's God saying? It's just, sometimes when we read it, we just want to hurry up and get past it. Okay, all that, let's get down here. You know, well, that's fine. I understand that. But God told Moses, write it down. Every place you encamp, I am there. How? Why was it so important? Because he couldn't move until when? When the cloud moved. That tells you how many times the eternal creator of heaven and earth encamped. Okay. And, of course, there's lessons and things we taught in all those 40 years there, which we don't have in detail. And God did not want that to be known, so we don't have it. Now, after he has told him how merciful he is and kind he is, and he's going to wipe out the enemy, and he's going to do this, he's going to do that, along he comes up here now in the 14th, the 17th chapter, and he says, I got to go back one more verse. Verse 15. Now I tell him, now after I'm doing all this, I will want you to make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land, that they play the harlot with, I'm using Hebrew word, their Elohim, and made sacrifices to their Elohim. And one of them invites you, and you eat to his sacrifice. And you take of his daughters for your sons, and your sons, your daughters, play the harlot with their Elohim, and make your sons play the harlot with their Elohim. Pretty powerful words, don't you think? Don't mess around. Don't compromise. Don't say, oh, I've got to be friends with these people. I'm going to go in there and I'm going to be understanding how they are. I'm going to get to know them so I can lead them to the Lord. I'm sorry. The Lord said, no. And we say, but a good Christian will go out of his way to do this, to get to know them and participate in some of the things they do, so they can then therefore lead them to Jesus. I'm sorry, I'm very critical. I'm very sarcastic. Won't buy it. Because, why? The Lord said unto Moses at least 150 times in those three books. So I'm going to have to pay attention to what the Lord said. Is it hard? Yeah. Is it difficult? Yeah. Do you lose friends? Yeah. Are you criticized because you don't get involved with these people who don't know Jesus and become part of one of them and live with them, be participating in what they do in order? No, you're supposed to be righteous. You're supposed to be righteous so they have someone to look to and say, my God, his God. What? The righteous man's God, the unrighteous man. And they have hope in your God, who is the righteous one.
So that's in verse 12, where it says, take heed to thyself, lest thou make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land, whither thou goest.
With their gods. That's the issue. Make a covenant with them, with their gods, their Elohims.
Okay.
That's
to be a snare.
A snare.
But it's a covenant. It's greater than a friendship. I mean, it's...
Yes, it's right.
It's an agreement.
Don't make a deal.
Something written?
No, not in those days. It's always oral. Okay. In fact, it only had to be written now in modern American society because in the last 100 years we have to have everything written down. We don't believe anybody. Everybody's a liar unless it's written down.
So in our day, you know, we don't let like Jehovah Witness or someone come into our home and say, you know, we want to be friends.
You make a judgment on that issue. I'm not going to tell you one way or the other. But you have. I never tell people what they should do and should not do. You have to make that decision, and you must make that judgment. I cannot make a judgment for you. I know what my judgment is, and I make my judgment. That's what I do. But I'm not going to tell you what I do, because you know why? Human beings have a tendency to follow another human being. I don't want to do that. I want to fall into what the Lord said unto Moses.
And I just think that everything that which is written down here in the 4th chapter is so important. I mean, it's how to keep the first and second commandment. And, I mean, it's so important that just, I'm not sure how much longer, but when Balaam and Balak, I mean, that was the very thing that...
They played harder with physically and spiritually.
Yes.
With their Elohim.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Obvious picture. I wasn't going to say that because I was going to say that when we got to Numbers, but you already got it. But you got the picture. When you see something physically taking place, listen, you're playing with a Elohim that is contrary to the creator of heaven and earth. How bluntly can I say that to you? But you must know.
For the sake of my guess, could you tell us what Elohim means?
It's a Hebrew word for God. Elohim is a Hebrew word for God. And I use the word Yahweh or Yahuwah. That's the name for capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D, called the Lord in the New Testament. Old Testament, really. Yeah. They're just Hebrew words. Susan.
Yeah, I think, you know, Yeshua, Jesus picked this up himself. In a way, you cast pearls before swine. You can't speak into these people's lives. If indeed, you know, you want to share the gospel, it has to be at the timing of the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
And by example. I was in the pool on Friday, and just an elderly lady of 70 was going to have a dragon tattoo up her leg. Older ladies were talking. And I was asking the Lord, Lord, what can I say? Shouldn't I say something? And I was told, no, you can say things, and it's pearls before swine. And they are kind of new age ladies, and they're going the way of the world. You can pray for them, I think, but to speak a word at the right time is what you do. Not just because you feel like you should speak it out. Otherwise, they just kick it into the gutter. And it's precious. Yeah.
All right, so we got a little picture here, the 34th chapter. But something very important. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had a similar incident happen. There was a lady I'm kind of acquainted with. She had a tattoo done maybe 3, 4, 5 years ago after she had been involved in a very serious car accident that was the word beloved in Hebrew. Her and her best friend both got this done. I mean, it used to be when you wanted to be best friends with somebody, you maybe exchanged necklaces or something.
Yeah, right,
you know, you'd have like two halves of like a little puzzle or something. You're my best friend.
Oh, it did. Cut
now
blood,
you
cut
do,
blood.
Yeah, maybe. And so now it's tattoos, I guess. And so I had that debate within myself. Do I say to her, you know, that was a bad idea? And I decided not to. Instead, how I presented it to her is I said, because I understood the spirit that she was doing it, and she's not a believer. And so I said to her, you know, it is kind of nice to be reminded that we're beloved of God, but I didn't put the dot, dot, dot of maybe this wasn't the best way to do it.
Yeah.
Because like Susan said, sometimes there's a time and place for everything. And God has specifically said that these people, this particular list of people, this four or five people groups here, you know, the Jebusite, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
They are beyond, it's too late for them now. They've gotten their fill of judgment. Now, and you notice there's plenty of other people groups God didn't say this to. He doesn't mention the Philistines here. He doesn't mention the Syrians or the Hittites. This is just a very specific group of people that God has said they are too far gone.
Yeah.
You're no good.
To a great degree, whether it's in Hebrew or in English or any other symbol, you are submitting to an Elohim.
Yeah, Tammy, he says it right there, by no means clearing the guilty.
Yep.
It's really, do you want to be cleared? It's your choice, right? It's like Yeshua said, light has come into the world, but men prefer the darkness because their deeds are evil. They like to keep doing evil deeds.
Yeah, we know it's just, God is love.
Yeah, that's true.
I have no problem with that one. However, his brand of love is nowhere near like mine. I would like to love a lot of things. No, I don't. Because it's wickedness. Because what? We are all having knowledge of something. Two things. We have knowledge of good. We have knowledge of bad. What's wrong? As you continue on doing what is wrong, it turns into evil. Right? And what did God say to Cain? Shut the door. It's your job. Shut the door. And he didn't. And it turned into an evil thing. She had one more statement.
My comment is David sinned against the Lord, I think, in the numbering of the people or one of the sins of David. And he was given a choice by the Lord. Should I deliver you to the people and let them judge you, or will you take the judgment from me? And he was, you know, people aren't merciful. I mean, the Lord is much more merciful than the people, because David chose the Lord, the hand of the Lord, and his judgment rather than the people.
But like Daniel said
him.
Last week, you know, Daniel's going to get cover that. I know he will. He's got a lot of background knowledge that God had granted him. At the same time, to make a long story short, is that God's mercy, death is not an issue with God. It really is not an issue with him. He can resurrect them back up again and say, by the way, do you know I killed you? Yes, sir. I'm going to do it again permanently if you don't listen to me. I'll use a paraphrase in it, right? And, wow, you know, you better listen to him. Second time, listen to what Moses was told.
Well, I was reading this week's Parasha, Shoftim, which is about you shall appoint judges to be at the gates of your cities.
Yep.
And a lot of the Jewish sages believe that your eyes, ears, nose, everything, the sensory input, are the gates of this body. And
right.
So we are to appoint judges. Just like you said, shut the door, watch what your eyes see, what your ears hear.
What comes out of here.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And even touch, you know, all of those things are the doors into our body. And
don't,
we are
don't mess
to
around
appoint,
with Elohim.
Right.
That doesn't is not the true Elohim. All right? It's a point and make it point and simple. All right, now where were we? Okay, on this second time in the mountain, by the way, he says, I'm going to write the same thing I wrote on the first set. Right? So we kind of know the second time they're still part of, but it's part of that other covenant he said he's going to make. Oh, what does it say about the New Testament covenant? I will do what? In the heart and in the mind, which no man can do that. I cannot write into my own mind the commandments of God, but God can. I can't write into my own heart the commandments of God, but God can. God is very loyal, very trustworthy, as he said he was. So I believe him. Because he said unto Moses. Amongst those are very interesting things. He said, verse 27 here, he says, write these words for according to the tender of these words, I will make a covenant with you and with Israel. Oh, didn't you already do that? One of the most puzzling statements in the book of Isaiah, one of the very first, I think it's the first chapter or second chapter, right offhand, I can't remember. And it says something. It says, now, the law, or the Torah, the law, will come forth out of... Oh, I thought it was out of... No, it's in Zion. Oh, that's interesting, you know? And Daniel just intervened in that subject matter of Zion, right? Okay, and then what else comes out? The word of the Lord comes from what?
Jerusalem.
I thought the word of the Lord came from someplace else. The temple. Well, it did. I thought it came from the tabernacle. Well, it did. He's going to make it permanent. And the whole world's going to want to go there. The leadership of the world, the governments of this world will want to go there and say, we need to find out what he wants us to do. And that's a beautiful time in the future, much in the future. But amongst these things, he said there's other things you must do. What are some of the things you want you to do? 3 times a year. Oh. Go ahead.
I don't know if it's important, but clarification, what you just said, my version says, I have made a covenant with you. Past tense. Is that correct, Hebrew, or is that incorrect?
What verse?
Oh, that's 27. You were just saying, I will make a covenant with you? Is it I will or I have?
I will. It's a future sense. It's not past tense.
So this is incorrect.
I will make.
Okay. Thanks.
Because it didn't make that covenant to them the first time. The New Testament covenant is, I will not lead you by the way I did before. Because it didn't work. Because people didn't want to be led. So he found fault with them. But now he's going to turn around. In Jeremiah, we know what it says. I'm going to do a different method. I'm going to make it a little bit different. And each one of you have come to understand something about the death of Jesus. And understand that, boy, he really did make the atonement, didn't he? He made it not just for me, but for the whole world. And how long, be honest with yourself, don't answer this question too out loud, but how long did it take you to finally really, really realize and come to really, really believe that he really did it? Or was this a statement you raised up all your life and you're just kind of like, okay, yeah, okay, I believe it. And you go through your life and never really look and see and hear what Jesus ever said. You just kind of take it. What I'm saying is that there's sometimes there in the Christian world, they just say, they want to preach about the Lord Jesus, but they don't really preach what Jesus said. But you have said, I'm going to find out what he said. And then you say, am I? How do I do that? Well, you don't. But he can. He says, my spirit's going to enter into you. My spirit is going to make it work. It's possible with me, but not possible with you. Apostle Paul, book of Romans says, the law is spiritual. And this is the reason thought me of another subject matter, but I disagree with a concept that had been taught by a messianic preacher. Okay, I just disagree with the concept. He's got an idea, and if it reaches people's mind. But he likened the laws of God as gravity holding you down. And you likened the airplane, the one that lifts you up above the gravity. However, the Torah is already spiritual. Always has been. The laws of God have always been spiritual. They've never been physical. They've always been spiritual. Because that's where it's heading. You understand what I'm saying? I disagree with that concept. I mean, if it reaches people and they have a better understanding of God, that's great. But I have a hard time saying, God pulling me down with the commandments. No, he's lifting me up with them. I'm with him on them all. You know, that's kind of a neat way of looking at it. Okay, now, he's going to tell him he wants to do something, and he's going to have, verse 17, I shall make a, you know, make a gold, a molded, make no molded Elohim for yourself, because they did before, right? You know, the people learned their lesson, didn't they? And this time, they waited for Moses to come down. They didn't say, oh, he's disconnected with us. He's not part of us. He's not one of us. They repented. Took a tragedy, but they repented. And he says, now listing these things off. Feast of unleavened bread. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. That which opens the womb of mine and every male firstborn among your livestock, whether ox or sheep, is mine. The firstborn of the donkey who carries the load, you shall redeem him with a lamb. And if you do not redeem him, then you shall break the donkey's neck. The next statement, really weird, but not really. All the firstborn of your sons shall be redeemed. Listen to the last statement. And none shall appear before me empty-handed. I'm sorry, he's not talking about money. He's not talking about grain. He's not talking about the tree fruits. He's talking about you must redeem it with what? A lamb. Your firstborn has to be redeemed with the lamb. Don't come to me without the lamb. If you come to me without the lamb, break your kid's neck. That's pretty strong, isn't it? I've been around for many years, and I've always heard people still with that the men should never come. They must come with money and give to the church. They can't come empty-handed. They must come with money. Feast tabernacle. Bring in money. Put your money. Put it in the till. And then you're not empty-handed. Come what you can, but you know, don't wait. He's not talking about the face of George Washington or Abraham Lincoln, the pity. He's not talking about those things. And very, very important to be kind of keep in mind what the actions of the firstborn. What's the action of the firstborn supposed to be? He carries the responsibility. This is talking about your Savior, your Lord, your Master. He is the firstborn amongst the dead. He is to carry it all. And he did. He carried it all. And it cost him his life. You think it's talking about you and me? You think it's talking about my son Daniel? Or you think it's talking about something else? Powerful statement. Now, we already read this before in the past. That's part of the, quote, Old Covenant, end of quote. It's still in now, on the second time on the mountain. Now, then you also will have what? 6 days you shall work, but the seventh day you shall rest. And in plowing time and in harvest time, you shall rest. Very clear. In verse 22, you observe the Feast of Weeks, the Feast of Shavuot, or what we call Pentecost. And the first fruits of the wheat harvest. The what? The Rashit of Hakaser. The Rashit of Hakaser. Now who's that? What does that represent? I went through the whole thing about, you know what I'm talking about, right? Rashit, it means the beginning. Right? For those who do not know. And Hakaser means the harvest. So the very beginning, or the first part of the head of the crops, after you have harvested them, not before, you will bring it unto him. Then you get to make bread from the rest of the crop, right? We all understand that. I know you've heard different teachings, and that's okay. If you believe something different, that's okay. I'm just going to explain what that means. And the feast of ingathering. At the end of the year, which means, of course, the feast days of Shavuot. And that includes the ingathering, by the way, includes the Feast of Trumpets. The calling is calling. Okay? And then this thing called atonement. You cannot enter into the Feast of Shavuot without entering into atonement. Got to enter into atonement. You got to go into that time of covering. Got to go in that time when all of the sins, iniquity, and transgressions are gone. The Feast of Shavuot is a holy time. It's a sacred time. You drop on down. I've said this before and I tried to explain it before. I don't know if anybody fully understands it. Verse 25, and you shall not offer the blood of my sacrifice with leaven. And the only sacrifice that he ever gave was the blood of his son. And that's what it's all about. In the Feast of Passover. Okay. Now I'll talk about the veil. I'm going to move it along a little quicker here because I'm running out of time. Verse 33, and when Moses had finished speaking with Moses, actually when God sent it back down again, we don't have all the detail written here. It is written later. We'll get to that when time comes. When Moses came down, and of course he's speaking with them, but a veil, but he put a veil on his face. The first time he talked to them, he didn't. They were scared. They were frightened. He came down. He talked with them. And the people, like you know, the Mount Sinai, when the thunder and the lightning and fire and the sound of the trumpets of God, the people backed away. They didn't want to get near that place. Very frightening, right? He scared them to death. Frightened them to death. He terrorized them. Why? So they wouldn't have time to think in their brain of, what's going on? Okay, just a lightning. No, he terrorized them. That's how God works. And of course, he had this veil. Now, Apostle Paul talks about that veil that finally faded away. But what do you think the veil represented? It covered something up. Covered up a thing called glory. What do you think the word glory means? There was a glory of the sun, glory of the moon, and a glory of that. And there's glory. That's what the Apostle Paul said, right? Remember that? Presence of God, power of God, authority of God, and you call it the weight of God. That's fine. But, you know, you got to pay attention to it. Our world and the children of our children are growing up believing that there is no glory at all. You should not be troubled by any glory. I'm telling you, they were fearful of that glory. They were frightened of that glory. So when we see, quote, Jesus coming in the glory, he's not going to come in there with, nice big huge halo around him. He's going to come with something on his side, you know. He's got a sword. Power, might, unbelievable. We use sometimes that word in our English language when we say the army comes. And it's a glorified army because the army is full of power and might and strength. Unbelievable power over their opponent. Right, and then finally it was removed. Now we have a chance to see through that veil now. What do we see? We see the Creator of heaven and earth. We see the Father there. Because we get to go and stuck to Him. We get to go boldly before the throne. Well, not yet, because we're still flesh and blood. But you know that had not happened for you. It had not happened for me. But it has happened for Jesus, right? He got to enter in. And we'll be able to see that someday, because the Apostle Paul says we'll be like Him when he returns and we change, are like him. I'm 5 minutes over time. Any last statements? Just one more thing to leave with you to remind you of this. We're talking toward when he came back down from that mountain on the 40th day, my personal opinion, he came down on the first day of the seventh month. Judgments came. This is now we have to go from here to atonement. Now, as we go through the next three chapters, 35 through 6 through 7, I think even 38, from that point on, they built the tabernacle and everything associated with it. And they completed it before the new year started. Everything was completed. So a whole new beginning started all over again for them.
Is there any significance just in the middle of nowhere? Obviously there's significance, but you passed over that young goat and the mother's milk thing.
Okay.
I remember having a niece really have a problem when she read that, and I really didn't know what to
do. Right, I know that. I'm not going to say, I'm not going to judge anybody on it. I'm looking at it from a different point of view. It has a spiritual point of view, not a physical point of view. That's very, very obvious to me when I see that. Who is the goat? What is the goat always used for?
Sacrifice.
The sin offering, over and over and over and over. Every holiday has to have a sin offering called the goat. All of them, all has to do with the goat. Don't. Mother's milk. I did it one for it. I can't remember exactly what it said a long time ago, but, you know, it's, It's really a spiritual thing, okay? Don't do it in the presence of my mother. However, Messiah was killed in the presence of his mother. Wow. Wow. Did you notice that? Jesus was killed in the presence of his mother. That's not really good news, is it?